CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman with Greg McKinnon and a foreword by Stephen Covey. Last show, we were looking at the section called The Liberator. We looked at Liberator number one, equity in the firm. And we're looking at Liberator two now, close encounters. Everyone knows Steven Spielberg is an award-winning film director. It is likely that your top 10 movie list includes one of his films. But why are his movies so successful, grossing an average of $156 million per film? Some would posit that it was his creative genius and his ability to tell a story. Others would point to his work ethic. But his active agent may be his ability to elicit more from his crew than other directors do. People who have worked on Spielberg's films say, quote, "You do your best work around him, period," unquote. One way he elicits the best thinking from people is that he knows what people are actually capable of producing. He knows everyone's job intimately, but he doesn't do it for them. He tells them that he has hired them because he admires their work. He uses his knowledge of the job and of the personal capabilities to set a standard for demanding their best work. He comes with strong ideas of his own, but he makes it clear that bad ideas are okay, are an okay starting point. He says, quote, "All ideas start as bad ideas. That's why it takes so long," unquote. He establishes an open, creative environment, but he still demands extraordinary work from his teams. One of his crew members said, quote, "He expects people to be doing their best, and you know it when you aren't giving your best," unquote. And why does Spielberg produce so many successful movies? Because his crew is twice as productive as those of some of the tyrant directors we studied. Because Spielberg creates an environment where people can do their best work. These artists and staff sign up to work with him again and again. In fact, Spielberg typically manages two projects simultaneously, each in different production stages, because his crew stays with him and rolls directly onto the next project. He gets their best work and two times the productivity, and they get to create award-winning films along with him. Liberator number three, a master teacher. Stop and think about the best teachers you've had. Pause for a moment and identify one or two in your mind. What type of learning environment did they create? How much space and freedom of thought did you have? What were the expectations of your performance? In what ways were you stretched and utilized? And how did you actually perform? I asked these questions of a dozen 8th grade students in Mr. Kelly's class. Mr. Patrick Kelly is an 8th grade U.S. History and Social Studies teacher at a distinguished California public school. He caught my attention when I learned that every year at middle school graduation ceremony, he not only gets more shout-outs and thank yous from the graduating students than any other teacher, he also gets more than all the other teachers combined. He is more talked about, more loathed, more beloved than any other teacher in the school. Why? I got my first glimpse at the Fall Parent Information Night at La Entrada Middle School. It is one of those night parents with multiple children dread because with 4 children, I have to get to 17 different teachers' classes, many simultaneously, defying the laws of physics. My daughter in 8th grade said to me, "Here's my class schedule. Get to as many classes as you can, but be sure to make it to Mr. Kelly's social studies class. And do not be late. And do not talk during his presentation. And do not answer your cell phone. And do not be late. Mom, did you hear me about not being late?" I entered his classroom both scared and intrigued. After the standard 12-minute segment with Mr. Kelly, I left enchanted with 8th grade social studies, ready to quit my job and go back to middle school to learn about U.S. history from Mr. Kelly. Why does Mr. Kelly affect students and parents alike in such a powerful way? It begins with his classroom environment. He makes it clear that you are there to work hard, to think, and to learn. One student said, in his class, he doesn't tolerate laziness. You're always working, thinking things over, and seeing your mistakes so that you can learn from them. It's a professional and serious environment. When it gets lighter and more fun as the students work harder. In this environment, students are encouraged to speak up and voice their opinions. Equal weight is given to asking a good question as answering one of his. Mr. Kelly's expectations for students' learning are both clear and extremely high. One student said, quote, "He believes that with high expectations come high results. He demands our best. He makes it clear that if we put in our hardest effort, we will succeed." Another said, "He doesn't hide anything from us and lets us know what to improve upon. He demands that we work to the best of our ability," unquote. No more, no less, just the best of their ability. There is no homework in his class, nothing assigned, nothing arbitrary. Instead, students are encouraged to do independent study to help them understand the ideas and perform well on tests. The students, having made the choice themselves, do the independent study with zeal. Not all students like Mr. Kelly. Some find him too tough, too demanding, and his expectations unfair compared to other teachers. For students wanting an easy path, his class can be a very uncomfortable environment. But most students are engaged by his intelligence and his dedication to thrive under his leadership. They experience his contagious passion and themselves become passionate about civil rights, the U.S. Constitution, and their role in the political process. Patrick Kelly is a multiplier who liberates his students to think and learn. He creates an environment where students can speak out, but where they're required to think and perform at their finest. It won't surprise you that 98% of students in his class score in the proficient or advanced levels of standardized state tests, up from 82% just 3 years ago. A hybrid climate. The secret behind the environment in Mr. Kelly's classroom and Ernest Rush's firm and Steven Spielberg's movie sets is in a duality we constantly found with liberators. They appear to hold two ostensibly opposite positions with equal fervor. They create both comfort and pressure in their environments. In the eyes of the liberator, it is just an exchange. I give you space, and you give me back your best work. Liberators also give people space to make mistakes. They create an environment of learning, but they expect people to learn from their mistakes. It is a fair trade. I give you permission to make mistakes. You have an obligation to learn from the mistakes and not repeat them. The power of liberators emanates from this duality. It isn't enough to just free people's thinking. They create an intense environment that requires people's best thinking and their best work. They generate pressure, but they don't generate stress. Liberators operate with a duality much like that of a hybrid car that switches over seamlessly between electric and the gasoline engine. At low speeds, the hybrid operates in electric mode. At high speeds, it draws on the gasoline to fuel extra demands on the engine. Such leaders create an open, comfortable environment where people can freely think and contribute. But when more power is needed, they evoke their demanding side that commands only the best performance from the others. How do liberators create a safe, open environment, but also relentlessly demand the best thinking and work from those around them? How do they get the full brain power of the organization? Let's turn to the practices of the liberator for answers. The three practices of a liberator. Among the multipliers we studied in our research, we found three common practices. Liberators, 1, create space. 2, demand people's best work. 3, generate rapid learning cycles. We'll examine each in turn. 1, creating space. Everyone needs space. We need space to contribute and to work. Liberators don't take it for granted that people have the space they need. They deliberately carve out space for others to be able to make a contribution. They do so in the following ways. Release others by restraining yourself. It is a small victory to create space for others to contribute, but it is a huge victory to maintain that space and resist the temptation to jump back and consume it yourself. This is especially true in formal, hierarchical organizations where people are accustomed to deferring to their leaders. Ray Lane, former president of Oracle Corporation and current managing partner in Kleiner Perkins Venture Capital, is a master executive restraint. One of his portfolio CEOs remarked, "Ray has learned the importance of restraint in leadership. He knows that less is more, and he never wastes an opinion." When Ray goes on sales calls to meet with executives at a potential client's, two things are certain. 1, the client will want to hear from Ray and his vast experience, and 2, Ray will be prepared. But despite these forces pulling him in, he holds back. He makes a few opening pleasantries, but he lets the sales team do the deal. Issues come up in conversation that Ray has a point of view about, but he still waits. The sales team, knowing full well that Ray could probably be doing a better job than they, continues their work nevertheless. When they are done, Ray then comes into the conversation. He still doesn't unleash his ideas or give a monologue, but he has listened carefully, knows exactly what he wants to add. He dispenses his views in small but intense doses. A longtime colleague of Ray remarked, "He'll often be quiet for long stretches at an important meeting. He listens to what others are saying, and when he does speak, everyone listens." Ray is well known as a brilliant strategist and perhaps one of the most articulate communicators in his business. But instead of overplaying himself and overplaying his ideas, he creates room for others and uses his presence where it can have the greatest potency and impact for the team.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you're listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenary. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement. ¶¶
Every year, countless people succumb to the temptation to purchase exotic animals like hedgehogs, lizards, monkeys, even tigers and bears to keep as pets. But life in captivity is often a death sentence for these animals, who may suffer from malnutrition, an improper environment, and the stress of confinement. For more information on this issue, visit the BCSPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF, 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenari, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman, with a foreword by Stephen Covey. We're working in the section The Liberator, subsections, shift the ratio of listening to talking. Liberators are more than just good listeners. They are ferocious listeners. They listen to feed their hunger for knowledge. They listen to learn what other people know and add it to their own reservoir of knowledge. As management guru C.K. Prahalad said to me, how smart you are is defined by how clearly you can see the intellect of others. They listen intently because they are trying to learn and understand what other people know. John Brandon, one of Apple Incorporated's top sales executives, runs an organization that brings in over $12 billion in revenue each year across three regions in the world. John is a high-energy sales leader and maintains an aggressive travel and meeting schedule, so getting time on his calendar can be tough. But when his direct reports meet with him on one-on-one, they get his whole presence. John listens intently to them and is keenly interested in understanding their reality. What is really happening on the ground with customers and with deals? He asks probing questions that get to the heart of the matter. One of his direct reports said, the difference with John is not that he listens, it is that he listens to an extreme. In a typical conversation, he spends 80% of his time listening and asking questions. By listening, asking, and probing, John develops an understanding of the realities of business and an understanding with his team of the opportunities and problems they face. This collective insight into the market has enabled John's organization to experience a phenomenal 375% growth over the last 5 years. John, who can certainly talk a good game himself, knows when it is time to listen. Liberators don't just listen to the majority of time. They massively shift the ratio, listening most of the time. This creates space for others to share what they know. Operate consistently. Imagine a troop of young girls competing in double Dutch jump rope. Visualize the smooth, even rhythm of the turning ropes. The turners stand at the ropes ends and rapidly turn the two ropes in opposite directions. Their role is clear and vital. Maintain both a consistent arc and a constant speed. Their consistency is what makes it safe for the jumpers to enter the whirring space. Any erratic turns or inconsistency and a jumper can't enter or trips doing so. Consistency creates predictability. When leaders are consistent, it lets others know when they can jump in and allows them to contribute. Operating with consistency is one of the most vital of the practices of the liberator. In our interviews, we continuously heard how multipliers operate with a consistency that enables others. For example, John Brandon was described as comfortable, consistent, confident, relaxed, and disarming. Craig Conway, former CEO of PeopleSoft, took emotion out of every situation. He put a consistently professional front to everything. The consistency of their actions create two effects. One, it establishes a predictable pattern of behavior. This allows others to know when it is their turn and when there is space for them to contribute. Two, it creates safety. When people operate in predictable ways, we know what to expect and we become comfortable around them. This comfort allows people not only to jump in, but to do so with full power of thought. Recall how Robert Enslin's consistent leadership created a calming effect on his organization. He was able to contain stress instead of flowing it out to the organization. This consistency gave people the platform for transparency and the ability to focus on real issues, delivering value to SAP customers, which in turn delivered revenue to the corporation. Level the playing field. In any formal organization, the playing field is rarely level, and certain voices are inherently advantaged. These include senior executives, influential thought leaders, critical organizations like product development or sales, and people with deep legacy knowledge. Unless managed, other voices are perhaps closest to the real issues can become muffled. Liberators amplify these voices to attract maximum intelligence and give advantage to the ideas and voices on the lower end of the playing field. When Nick Reilly, the first president and CEO of GM Daywood Auto and Technology, GMDAT, took the reins, he brought together the American automaker and the very traditional Korean company. He also took explicit steps to level the playing field. Reilly created a senior leadership team consisting of 4 Koreans, 3 Europeans, and 4 Americans. Reilly, a native of the UK, knew the GMT was likely, the GM team was likely to dominate. Yet, it was clear to him that the success of the organization depended on the team's ability to draw on the talent and intellectual assets of the former Daywood members. Reilly served as an amplifier, establishing systems for drawing out the contributions of the Korean team members, who were all in their mid-50s and initially spoke limited English. He made sure that all the executive meetings were simultaneously translated into Korean. At every turn, he showed respect for the Korean team and the legacy Daywood had built. He asked the Korean team members what aspects of Daywood's culture needed to be preserved and consequently protected them. He created learning teams by pairing Koreans with non-Koreans to work together and learn from each other. Out of these two cultures, he created a third joint culture based on a set of common values and a level playing field. His team created a new mission, a new vision, and new values for the organization and began to embed them in the Korean operations. Under Reilly's leadership, functional silos were reduced, and a company that had been on the brink of liquidation had become a major revenue source for General Motors. It also became a hub for global small car design and development, with complete vehicles and kits for assembly at other GM facilities being sold in more than 150 countries worldwide. A 3,000% volume increase from 1 year alone. One senior executive stated, quote, "The way Nick led this joint venture created a higher level aspiration for all of us." GMDAT is not exempt from the challenges of today's business world and recently posted a loss, but in October 2009, GM increased its ownership stake in GMDAT to 70%. A strong statement of its belief in the Korean unit. Reilly now heads GM International Operations and in October 2009 was named an honorary citizen of Seoul. Liberators begin by creating space, but they do more than create space for others to contribute. Well, yes, they do provide the space, but they also expect the extraordinary work in return. Demand for people's best work. Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State under Richard Nixon, was a master at getting people's best work. According to one story, the chief of staff once handed in a report he had written on an aspect of foreign policy. When Kissinger received the report, he asked simply, is this your best work? The chief thought for a moment and, worried about his boss would think that the report was not good enough, responded, Mr. Kissinger, I think I can do better. So Kissinger gave the report back. 2 weeks later, the chief turned in the revised report. Kissinger kept it for a week and then sent it back with a note said, are you sure this is your best work? Realizing that something must have been missing, the chief once again rewrote the report. This time he handed the report to the boss and said, Mr. Kissinger, this is my absolute best work. Upon hearing this, Kissinger replied, then this time I will read your report. There are a few ways that liberators demand the best from those they work with. Defend the standard. Larry Gelwicks, the head coach of Highland Rugby, stood at the center of a huddle of rugby players at the side of his field for his team's first game debrief of the season. Larry asked one question. Did you give your best? One player enthusiastically spoke up. Well, we won, didn't we? Not unkindly, Larry said. This is not the question I asked. Another player jumped in. We just dominated that team. We won 64-20. What more could you ask for? Larry said. When you came for tryouts, I said I expected your best. This means your best thinking out there, as well as your best physical effort. That is what you give today. One player described one game played on the island of Tonga when he could answer yes to Larry's question. He said, I had a painful shoulder contusion after a devastating tackle on my opponent. I was ready to quit, ready to let the team down. I couldn't lift my arm and the pain was excruciating. I can remember I began to chant Haka, a traditional Maori war chant, in my head. I remember looking over at the sunset through the palm trees. At that moment, the game seemed to stop, and I had a choice. A voice told me that I needed to keep going and do my best, not only for myself, but also for who I am, and most importantly, for the other members of the team, for my brothers. The voice was the recollection of countless practices and games with the coach, and he simply asked, "Is this your best?" I finished the game with two ties, each equivalent to a touchdown, becoming the first high school American to score in Tonga. As a manager, you know when someone is below his or her usual performance. What is harder to know is whether people are giving everything they have to give. Asking whether people are giving their best gives them the opportunity to push themselves beyond their previous limits. It is the key reason why people report that multipliers get more than 100% intelligence out of them. We're going to continue looking this at the aspects of the liberator leader in future shows. So please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio Salmon Fraser 90.1 FM.
सुन रहे हो CGSF 90.1 FM, जो कि बर्नबी, ब्रिटिश कोलंबिया में स्थित है।